You're listening to the GP Soccer Podcast with your host, Giovanni Puccini. Ah, yes, the most wonderful time of the year. I guess we can officially say we're in the holiday season, right? Christmas is three weeks away. So, yeah, it's the holiday season. So we start the GP Soccer Podcast with a little holiday music to get us all in the holiday spirit. Goodness knows we need it. So this is Giovanni Puccini, ho, 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 host of the GP Soccer Podcast. Hope you enjoy that little holiday opening. Goodness knows I did. I really enjoy the holiday season. I think most people do. Even as we grapple with COVID-19, which is the cornerstone of everything we do, it seems like I think hopefully the holidays can bring us a little bit of joy in this rather challenging time of year. But soccer goes on. The show goes on. And today's guest will be Warren Backman. Warren Backman. So I'll get into Warren's background in a little bit, but I kind of want to kind of give you a context of what the show is about today and why I have Warren on. A little while back, I had an interview on the GP Soccer Podcast with Thomas Coombs, and Thomas is a young and up and coming coach. He's down with a club, St. Augustine. In St. Augustine, Florida, and he's actually my mentee for the United Soccer Coaches 30 Under 30 program. I am his mentor, and I had him on because, you know, everyone starts at the bottom rung of the ladder. Everyone, no matter what walk of life you have chosen to follow, you start at the bottom rung. You start at the very beginning, and I always want to provide stories and provide insight and have people tell their story, because people who listen to the show not are all in the top of the ladder or in the middle of the ladder or whatever. You know, there are folks listening to this show that, you know, they're on the bottom of the ladder and they're just getting started. And I think having someone like Thomas Coombs, or in this case today, Warren Backman, tell their story as young and up and coming coaches is really, really important, to this show. The wrinkle, if you will, between the interview I had with Thomas a while back and now with Warren is the COVID-19. And the timing is great, because he's a young and up and coming coach, and Warren, who's, you know, not only, you know, facing the challenges of trying to navigate his way through the coaching profession as a young guy, but he's going to navigate it through a global pandemic. So he's aptly suited to discuss his journey, the challenges he has faced and is facing as a young coach while dealing with the pandemic. Full disclosure, I know Warren very well. Warren is the graduate assistant over at Regis College in Weston, Massachusetts, where I am the goalkeeper coach. So I know Warren pretty well, and I know you're going to enjoy the conversation I have with him. He's an outstanding young man. He's got a great personality. Got a bit of a broadcaster voice. He has done some broadcasting, which I'll I'll get into when I do the introduction on the other side of the show. So that's what we got. We got a little holiday opening for the GP Soccer Podcast. I do hope you enjoyed that. And I think you will certainly enjoy the conversation I have today with Warren Backman. So we're going to break for a commercial, very brief commercial. On the other side, I will introduce you to Warren Backman. This is GP's. This is the GP Soccer Podcast. I'm Giovanni Pacini. Ho, ho, ho. Don't you go anywhere. Hey there. This is Giovanni Pacini, host of the GP Soccer Podcast. You all know me as a soccer coach and a clinician, but did you know that I'm a professional voiceover artist as well? My voice has been heard on radio, television, as well as other media platforms. If you'd like to learn more about my services as a voiceover artist, contact me at gp4voiceover@gmail.com. That's GP, the number 4, voiceover@gmail.com, or at 617-968-1800.
This is Pete Mendel. I'm the head men's soccer coach at Curry College Men's Soccer, and you're listening to the GP Soccer Podcast with your host, Giovanni Pacini.
And welcome back to the GP Soccer Podcast. You know who I am. I'm Giovanni Pacini, your host. As I noted to all of you before the commercial break, our guest today will be Warren Backman. And I asked Warren to come on because, as I noted earlier, you know, he's a young, an up-and-coming coach. He's going to be finishing up his graduate work next spring. And, you know, like all of us who start at the bottom rung, he's at the bottom rung and maybe on the second rung, and he's trying to find his way up through the ladder. But the twist, as I noted earlier in all this, is, you know, is dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, and how does that change, you know, the path toward, you know, becoming a coach or climbing up that that coaching ladder. So as I noted, our guest today is Warren Backman. Warren is currently in his second season as a graduate assistant coach for the Regis College men's soccer team, where he's slated to graduate next year, earning a master's degree in strategic sports communication. He graduated from Emerson College in 2018, earning his bachelor's degree in sports communications, and was a four-year starter for the Emerson men's soccer team. Upon graduating, Warren served as the lead broadcaster for Boston City FC of the National Premier Soccer League and played semi-professionally for the Boston Siege of the United Premier Soccer League. Warren's father, Derek, was a former professional player himself, with a 16-year professional career spanning from his native South Africa to playing for the Tampa Bay Rowdies and Tampa Bay Mutiny in Major League Soccer. So Warren, welcome to the GP Soccer Podcast.
Thank you, Mr. Pacini. I appreciate it.
Oh, no, I'm very happy to be here. Mr. Pacini. Oh, no. Let's, you know. Well, full transparency here, Warren and I work together over at Regis College in Weston, Massachusetts, where, again, as I noted, he's the graduate assistant. I am the goalkeeper coach. So Warren and I spend a lot of time together, so we know each other. So what you're going to find here, ladies and gentlemen, this is going to be one of those Giovanni Pacini, Warren Backman, typical soccer conversations. So, you know, you've got a little bit of background in broadcasting. I have to put on my best broadcaster voice. The pressure's a little on me here, Warren, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the broadcasting thing kind of came out of nowhere. You know, I had graduated Emerson, and I was wanting to work in sports, obviously, for my sports communications degree. And I was trying to find jobs, maybe going back to Florida, where I'm from, Tampa, and work there for the Tampa Bay Rowdies. I had interned for Orlando City. I was trying to work there as well, maybe something in the MLS. And when the opportunity arose with Boston City, it was kind of out of the blue. And my boss, Michael Preston there, and Craig Tornberg was the director of soccer operations at the time. He, you know, welcomed me in, and I was able to actually do it with one of my teammates from Emerson. So it just made the experience much, much, much easier. And, you know, I was able to just kind of get a foot in the door, start working and start making connections in the soccer world. And I went from there.
Interesting. So here's where I'd like to begin, Warren, with all of my guests, because I'm curious and I think my audience is curious. So I gave you a little bit of a bio. I've kind of get you started at the kind of the college level. Give us, you know, the Warren Backman story, you know, where you grew up, your playing background, where you played in, you know, high school or club. Did you have any, you know, soccer idols growing up? Obviously, I think your dad might have been one. But beyond your dad, Derek. So kind of navigate my audience, if you will, the Warren Backman story that kind of led you to where you're at right now over at Regis College.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I was born just outside of Tampa in this little place called Spring Hill, Florida, which is an hour north from Tampa. And, you know, my whole life naturally was, you know, I wasn't necessarily forced into playing soccer. Played a lot of other sports when I was younger, you know, football, baseball, and whatnot. But naturally, over time, as I grew older, I just gravitated towards soccer. And with my father being who he was, I unfortunately never got to see him play when he was in the MLS. He retired from the Tampa Bay Mutiny when I was 2 in 1998. And ironically, our head coach at Regis, Renato Capobianco, was the assistant at the time. So small world. It's funny how things work out that way. But so I grew up in Spring Hill, and I played youth soccer there for the Hernando Heat, which is a local youth soccer team there. And in sixth grade, I ended up moving to Tampa to attend Berkeley Preparatory School. It's a K-12 school, very prestigious private school there in Tampa. Always ranked, you know, one of the best schools academically in the state, in the Southeast. One of those schools where, if I were to compare it to something up here, would be in that ISL category of the Belmont Hills, the Phillips Andover, and so on and so forth. It's very, very a prestigious private school down there. And, you know, my parents wanted the best for me, naturally, as I'm sure all parents do, right? And so as we made the move to go to Berkeley Prep, the option became, well, listen, you know, now we've got an hour drive to practice there and back, you know, and the quality of obviously in those town leagues, as we call them up here in New England, are not usually the best in the world, to be quite honest. So the whole switch kind of came when I attended Berkeley, and then I switched to playing for Tampa Bay United, which ended up becoming now is known as the Tampa Bay Rowdies. Who overtook them. And then as I grew older, my first coach at the Tampa Bay United was Neil Roberts, actually, who was ironically a former Rowdies player for the 70s and 80s, another South African guy as well. And he was able to just, you know, was a hard-nosed guy, taught me the fundamentals. And my father, ironically, at the start, didn't want anything to do with coaching me. He wanted to just kind of let me have my own experience. He didn't want to get involved. He just kind of wanted to take a step back. And of course, you know, he was there to mentor me and give me tips and so on and so forth. But he never necessarily wanted to overstep his boundaries, I think. And when I hit under 15s, Neil Roberts left the club and kind of took a step back. And my father was thrust into the limelight, you could say. So my father was my coach from under 15s, obviously on. And around the time that was when the developmental academy started taking place. And so what ended up happening was, you know, there's a lot of attention around the Clearwater Chargers was a local DA club. Obviously Orlando City wasn't even around yet. And it was kind of just the Rowdies were just coming back. This was 2009, 2010. And, you know, ultimately, it was the decision of, listen, you know, is it worth going to the Chargers now because they have the big fancy DA program and so on and so forth. But what my father is able to do was just through his, you know, contacts and just who he is and just being a quality coach was able to get a lot of the best players there. And so we, from under 15s on, went on a little bit of a run, you could say, in terms of, you know, state cups, going to Raleigh, going to Surf Cup. And that was my experience. You know, I had an incredibly hard academic experience at Berkeley Prep and played for the varsity team for 5 years there. I ended up actually playing in eighth grade because they were able to move middle schoolers up if they were good enough. And when I went moved up, I mean, I was sitting on the bench and would come on for the last 10 minutes when we were up 6-0. But nonetheless, it was still 5 years of varsity experience there. So I was playing for Berkeley Prep on the varsity team as well as traveling and playing. At the time, it was called Region 3 Premier League. So as it was called the Region 3 Premier League, we were traveling every weekend to, you know, instead of just going to, hey, we're going to, you know, Jacksonville or Miami this weekend. Now we're going to Alabama. Now we're going to Georgia. Now we're going to South Carolina. And that took a toll. I think that took a toll just time-wise. That took a toll academically, obviously. And those are, you know, just the sacrifices, obviously, you have to make in order to be able to you know, accomplish what you want to accomplish. And I knew that I was a good player. I was a left back and left midfielder, took corners, took free kicks, was a bit of a free kick specialist, and just trying to work hard, and was by no means the most talented player on the team by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, as, you know, we kind of moved into junior, senior year, when the recruiting process obviously really starts to take place, my school at Berkeley was very adamant with us and with all students that, you know, not to talk disparagingly about my home state, but the quality of academics in the South versus a place like New England is obviously night and day. And Berkeley, being the caliber of school of which it is, wanted us to be able to, you know, reach for the stars and naturally attend schools that are worthy of the work that we had put into graduating Berkeley. And so from a very young age, I was interested in going to New England. And I wanted to study communications. I knew I wanted to do something sports related. I was into writing. I was into screenwriting. I was into comedy. I was into a bunch of different things at the time, as most young men are. And I was very interested in, you know, how can I be able to, you know, get up there? You know, it seems when you're in Florida, it seems New England and Boston seem like a million miles away. And I just wasn't really aware of, you know, how I could do it. And at that time, you know, I didn't have the knowledge that I obviously now as a coach know about, hey, let's make a highlight tape, let's send it out, you know, hey, let's go to this showcase, let's go to this ID camp. And also flying up there really wasn't an option with my schedule with school and soccer and whatnot. So, and the other extracurricular activities I did, I was in the band, I did drama, I did theater, I was in an a cappella group, if you can believe that, in high school. So I had my fingers in a lot of different things. And I think that ultimately that kind of held me back from that recruiting process a little bit. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, I was very adamant about got to research schools, got to, you know, narrow down. I want to study communications. What are the best communication schools? All right, we've got Boston University, so on and so forth, all New England based schools. And the tide kind of changed for me at the end of my junior year. I went to the Ray Reed camp, which obviously a lot of young kids do. It's a big camp at UConn. And that's when the wheels started to turn. I got noticed by a plethora of different schools there. I just played my tail off for those week and a half or 2 weeks, however long the camp is. And I felt that I had played, luckily, my best soccer, that the best possible way that I could showcase myself, I did at that camp. And I ended up going on visits throughout my senior year to Holy Cross, Boston University, Fordham, and Bentley. And I was very, very keen on the fact that, you know, I want to go to a New England school. I want to go to a quality, private, you know, liberal arts New England school, because that is what the education I got in back in Tampa. And so, you know, one thing leads to another, you know, as what happens with a lot of recruits, you know, they just, things slip away, you know. Holy Cross, I was not accepted, to be pretty blunt. Boston University, the issue, it wasn't working out really with playing time. They weren't concerned about me able to play. And naturally, you know, I wanted to play right away, or I wanted to play, you know, after my freshman, sophomore year or so. And I was having difficulty at the D1 level speaking to coaches, fathoming, you know, how can I only have, you know, 4 years, like you say 4 years, but realistically the season's only 2-3 months. So realistically, you know, how can you only really have like 12 months of soccer left and I'm not even going to be playing half of it? And they're just telling me that, you know, straight up. And I got a little bit disillusioned in that sense. And I think that, when I was speaking to the BU coach, Scott
Roberts.
Black. Yeah, yes. Well, Scott Black was the assistant, but also Neil Roberts at the time, of course. It was Scott Black who recommended, hey, listen, if you love New England so much and you want to do communications, why don't you just literally look right down the street? There's a school called Emerson. And I had heard of Emerson before. And I had, you know, been interested into it, but I hadn't applied. And like, keep in mind, this was like February. You know, I mean, this was getting late into the process of when kids usually recruit, or at least, you know, D1 schools have definitely, you know, rounded up their rosters by then, and they're all set and done for the year. And you know, I was trying to walk on possibly at Fordham or somewhere else that I was looking. And ultimately, when I spoke to Jared Scarpacci, who was the coach at Emerson at the time, he just gave me a phenomenal pitch and just said, listen, you know, you can study what you want in the location that you want, and you're going to be a valued member of the team. And we're looking for a left back and a left mid. And, you know, ours is graduating right now. He was a senior. And, you know, you have the opportunity to potentially, if you work hard and prove yourself, of course, you know, come in and prove yourself right away. And I really relished that challenge. And, you know, I thought that maybe that fit would be a little bit better for me. I had never been to Boston before. I had never seen snow before. I had never been to the New England area. My mother's from Maine. So I kind of been up to Maine a few times in the summer, of course, not in the winter, to visit some cousins and whatnot. But I had never really been up there, and I went up there for literally half a day during spring break. And I spoke to Jared Scarpacci. I spoke to a couple players. And when it all came down to it, I was going to Emerson at the end of the day. And that's how I ended up coming up here to Boston. And it's been 7, 8 years now, and I've never left. I've loved it. I love my experience playing for Emerson. The New Mac was a fantastic conference, which at the time was one of the best in, and still is one of the best in the country for Division III. I got to play against fantastic schools like Babson and MIT, Springfield, and so on, and was able to play against nationally ranked teams in you know, in a very, very competitive environment. And, you know, was able to start for 4 years, as you said, and really make an impact on the program, and got a ton of, you know, played a ton of minutes, played a ton of games, and was able to really make my mark on the team. And as you said, when I graduated, was able to work at Boston City commentating, and I kind of realized, you know, I might need to get my master's if I want to move forward in this sports world. Everyone and their mother was simply telling me that, you know, you need a master's, you know, a four-year degree is not enough these days. And, you know, looking back, I was like, well, you know, mom and dad have already paid for Berkeley Prep, and they've helped me pay for Emerson. So another $60,000-$70,000 for grad school was not on the cards, let's just say. And for them to turn the onus over to myself, who obviously at the time had not nearly saved up enough money to be able to pay for it, I started looking at little avenues of how I could potentially, you know, get a free grad degree. And then I realized, obviously, there's these graduate assistant positions where you can work for a school in some capacity and get your master's for free. And then when I realized there's coaching positions, you know, my father's obviously coached for many, many years. And I had never thought twice about it, coach. I never once thought, you know, hey, this is something I could seriously do. This is something that I would, I always thought that I, you know, could do it if given the opportunity, but I never really like seriously debated it in my mind. And
hold that thought, hold that particular thought about, because I want to get into that. I want to get into that. So let's backtrack just for a second here. We joked a little bit early on about the broadcasting thing. So you get your undergraduate degree in sports communications. You get you're earning a graduate degree in strategic sports communication. You are a broadcaster for Boston City FC. Was that ever a serious career consideration for you?
Oh, absolutely. Hmm. At the time, for sure. I mean, the great thing about Emerson, just to plug them a little bit, is that sports communication degree that you get encompasses everything. It encompasses sports marketing, sports writing, sports journalism, sports management, broadcasting. And that, you know, kind of, you know, jack of all trades type of thing really allowed me to really just explore anything I wanted. And I really enjoyed the broadcasting side. I really enjoyed making, you know, fun sports related, you know, you can call them barstool-esque videos. I really enjoyed the whole marketing, advertising side of sports. And that's kind of, I thought like, you know, I can go down one of these avenues. There's a couple I can choose from. Let's just see what sticks, you know, let's just see which one kind of works out. And when I got the opportunity at Boston City, I thought, you know, from here, you know, I could maybe, you know, I had no clue how the business worked. I could go on to maybe like the Revs. I could go back to Florida and commentate for the Rowdies or for Orlando City. And I had done that previously for Orlando City on the radio as well through one of my internships. So I had experience doing it. And I felt that honestly that, you know, if I could work that out, that it could definitely be a career path. But ultimately, as I kind of discovered and talking to other commentators and whatnot was, like most things that are unfortunately worth chasing, it's very, very tough industry to break into. And it would be very difficult, especially with my only experience being in soccer related. I would definitely have had to branch out to other sports. You know, soccer is obviously mainly played in the summertime here in the States. So naturally, over the course of the other, you know, fall, winter time of the year, MLS is being played, some college is being played, trying to, you know, freelance, get a contract out to those guys. It was just a little bit murky for someone who was 22 years old to really navigate. So I wish that I maybe would have stuck it out a little bit more. And I think I was a little bit naive at the time to just not necessarily give up, but kind of take a step back and look for another path. But that was ultimately what happened. You know, we have to live and die by our decisions.
Well, I'll tell you what, Warren, you know, you don't have to put broadcasting on, you know, on the back burner. My original career intent was radio and TV broadcasting. You and I have talked about that on numerous occasions.
Right, right.
And then, you know, I had the aha moment and everything changed. You know, got into physical education and started coaching soccer. But lo and behold, here I am some many years later, broadcasting.
Right.
Broadcasting. So, you know, you may find out that somewhere along the line, no matter what soccer path you go down, you know, you got a laptop, you got a microphone, you've got the pipes, right?
Right.
You can be a broadcaster. So, you know, I'm always curious about this too. Did you have an aha moment about, I want to coach? Was it someone who said, hey, you know, Warren, maybe you might want to think about coaching? When was that moment, or who was it, or maybe both, that provided you that career path that has now put you on the journey toward becoming a soccer coach?
Yeah, there definitely was a few of them, actually. I just had remembered that when the season for Boston City ended, of course, in the summertime, and I was looking for, you know, listen, I'm out of school now. I've worked a little bit. I need a more, you know, long-term type thing. I was still doing some stuff for Boston City, but it was very, very much part-time. And, you know, I was still playing for Boston Siege at the time, and I was kind of just, you know, staying busy, but with nothing that was concrete, so to speak. And it was actually one of my good friends who I played with at Emerson, Nico Emack is his name. He is now the JV coach for Cambridge Regional Latin, which is the school he attended, and obviously played for Emerson as well with me. And, you know, he had just said that he had been coaching. He had been coaching at Cambridge. He was on the freshman team coaching them, and he was coaching some club in the area. And it was kind of an aha moment of, you know, listen, you know, my friend Nico is doing it. Maybe this is something I could get into. And every time I saw him after practice or before practice, he would be so excited to go. And he was like, I just love working and interacting with the kids. I love teaching them, you know, it's soccer related. The day just flies by. It's amazing. You have to try it. You have to try it. So he was the one who was like, hey, you know, you can do it. You absolutely can do it. I'm doing it. And, you know, with all due respect to like other coaches, you know, I obviously have been fortunate to play for some great coaches, Neil Roberts, my father, Jared Scarpacci, and then Brian Harkin, who's the current coach of Emerson now. And there's as much as there's some great share of fantastic coaches out there, we all know that unfortunately there are some not so great coaches. And I just thought to myself that, listen, you know, if there are other people who are doing it, why not just try give it a, you know, a go, so to speak. And when I was looking for the graduate assistant positions for my master's degree, and like I said, when I found out that you could coach, it kind of all clicked at that aha moment of, oh, this is an avenue that I can really take in order to, at the very, very least, get my master's degree. And then I think the light bulb fully went on when I first started. You know, as I go in, I luckily am able to get the job. and be named the graduate assistant. And we go into preseason and everything's great. And I'm learning the guys' names. I'm learning the culture. I'm doing everything I can. I'm soaking up everything from guys like yourself and Renato Capobianco and so on. And, you know, that first, our first game was ironically against Emerson College at Emerson. So a little bit of a homecoming. And I remember leading up to the game, Renato told me that, you know, listen, this is your game. I want you to be able to, you know, watch them play, get some film on them, you know, scout them, and then give the team the spiel, the team talk, the film talk, whatever you want to call it, tactics, and go from there. And I was petrified, to be honest. I was like, are you going to give a guy who has never coached a game in his life, you know, the reins sort of for the week leading up to the game? And I was concerned because naturally my whole competitive nature is coming out, and I'm saying, well, I obviously want to win, and naturally it's ironically against, you know, my old team. I want to do well against them and, you know, show them, you know, who I am and whatnot. And, you know, on the opposite side of me, you have Brian Harkin, who is, you know, played for Liverpool and come over here and played at Fairfield and played in the USL and then won two national championships as the assistant with Josh Shapiro at Tufts, and now is the coach at Emerson and is a incredible soccer mind. And for me to even, you know, try and lock horns with someone like that was not even fathomable, you know, 5 months prior to that. So for me to be able to go and be given the confidence from Coach Renato to be able to kind of, like I said, have liberties and take the reins and kind of go for it in terms of the tactics that we had and the style of play and especially with the film and the team talk was so liberating to me. And I realized when I was doing it, I was like, this is it. That energy I have, that is what it's all about. And luckily for us, the game went very, very well. We were down 1-0 at halftime and we ended up winning 3-1. And it was a fantastic game. And I think the boys followed my plan beautifully. And that was, as you said, the aha moment where it really all came together and it clicked, was like, wow, I scouted a team. I did the team talk. I gave the training sessions. I did the whole works, right? I gave them the game plan. They executed the game plan. And there's the payoff. We won the game. And when that all kind of came together on that one day, I was like, this is for me. This is for me. I really enjoy doing this. It was like a magical moment, you know.
It's like Christmas.
Yeah, it was like
Christmas, the holidays.
Christmas in September.
But there you go.
Yeah, well, it was fantastic.
I'll tell you, you were very fortunate, and I'm gonna Renato Capobianco, who we're referring to here, is a dear friend of mine, and obviously I work with Renato and you over at Regis. A lot of coaches, and you know this, Warren, would never even consider handing the reins in such a fashion to a graduate assistant.
Oh God, no.
No, yeah, but Renato is one of those people who is very secure in who he is, what he is, his capabilities. He's very secure in how he, you know, handles a situation. And he sees the only way a young guy like you can learn is by, you know, giving you the reins, so to speak. So you were very fortunate, and we both sing and have to sing Renato's praises for being the type of professional that would see a young man like yourself and have the security to hand you the reins to coach against your alma mater of all
yeah,
opponents.
Absolutely.
So I have to ask you, because this comes up a lot when I teach coaching education courses, and we often talk to coaches about young coaches in particular about the player mentality and the coaching mentality. Did
right.
you find yourself wrestling with being a player, not just very, very recently, and then obviously your coaching? Did you find yourself, there was a lot of player juices going on? Did that cloud your capacity to look at the game objectively? Did you have a back and forth with that? How did you deal with the mentality going from a player, the player mindset, the player preparation, the player being literally on the field versus the coach who's not on the field and has to take a more cerebral approach to the game at hand? How did that work for you?
Oh, it was a struggle. It was
I
an
know.
absolute struggle at
I know.
first. I
I
know you
set you
were
up on
there.
that. I know. Go ahead.
It was a struggle at first because, you know, naturally, I mean, I was just only 2 years removed from playing my last game for Emerson, you know, and now all of a sudden I'm thrust into doing this. And like I said, I was very fortunate. One of the reasons why I came to Regis over some other schools that I had the offers to be the graduate assistant is because Renato said, listen, you're going to have more of a role here. You're going to be, you know, not just a graduate assistant or just not, you know, one of five or six or seven other coaches. You are the only assistant and thus, you know, technically the head assistant, and you are going to have the reins for a lot of different things. And so I thought that, oh, you know, yeah, I'll be more sophisticated and laid back, but it's very easy to say that, and it's another thing to do it. My biggest challenge, I think, when I first started was exactly what you said, which was that I wanted to kick every ball, you know, head every ball, run after, you know. And so naturally during the first few games, I'm like, you know, press, 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 you know, tuck in, and I'm shouting nine different things, you know, to everybody. And it eventually took, you know, people like yourself and Coach Renato to be like, hey, how about you just calm down? Why don't you just take a seat on the bench and just kind of observe things and take more notes from an analytical standpoint? And I think that really helped me. There was a game that we played against St. Joe's of Maine, who are obviously, you know, nationally ranked and very, very good team. And we ended up tragically losing 1-0 late. We had a very good game, but I didn't scream once the whole game. I didn't, well, not scream, that sounds bad, but I didn't direct anybody or get up off the bench and start, you know, finger pointing and whatnot and directing traffic, if you want to call it, once throughout the whole game. And I thought that was one of our best games of the season. So that was another light bulb of, oh, hold a second, I can trust these players naturally to do the right thing. And it makes sense, right? I mean, like thinking about logistically, if I or any coach prepares their team properly and they know what they need to do throughout the week, they know the game plan, they know what to expect, they know, you know, their style of play and how they're going to play and their shape and so on and so forth, there's really no reason for a coach to be up off the bench screaming and jumping up and down and stamping his feet. I think there's obviously something that goes to say with encouraging players and obviously motivating them and hyping them up, if you want to call it that. I think that's a big part of college soccer versus, you know, playing academy or playing regular club soccer as well. That's a different kind of component to it. But I think that ultimately that was something that I struggled with, was being able to just kind of, you know, at first, you know, relax and just, you know, be able to say, okay, look, we're losing 1-0 or we're tied 0-0. You know, how are we able to, you know, get the ball wider, quicker? How are we going to be more efficient in the final third? What tactical switches can we change? We're playing a 4-2-3-1. Could we change to a 4-3-3? Could we change to a 4-5-1? And instead of, you know, like these are things that obviously I thought as I started, oh yeah, I'll just do that in the middle of the game. But there's one thing, as I said before, saying it, and then when you're in the heat of battle, so to speak, to kind of have that thought process of, okay, let me take a step back and think about this logically. All right, we're not getting enough crosses in the box. How can we solve this? All right, we got to get the ball wide. Fullbacks need to overlap more, or so on and so forth, right? So that was something that I think was difficult, and I'm sure it's difficult for a lot of young coaches like myself who are kind of transitioning over into the coaching field. But after about half a season, I was good. I was all set.
So talk to the audience, particularly the young coaches who are listening, staying on the idea of the player mentality or the coach mentality, the importance of having a mentor or mentors to help you through that process.
It's massive. I think it's everything. I mean, you know, as I said before, I was fortunate enough to have my father as a coach, other ex-Rowdy professionals as a coach, Jared Scarpacci, who is the vice president of Aztec Youth Soccer, and then the coach of Massman High School. And then at the same time, you know, Brian Harkin as well. And then besides that, I mean, after get all those, you know, A pluses in a row, then you're rolling the dice again with who you get. And I'm getting yourself and Renato Capobianco, who's coached in the MLS and you know, won the Supporters' Shield and was the team administrator for the men's national team through the 94 World Cup. And it's just like, I was incredibly fortunate, so that, you know, I just wanted to be a sponge, and I just knew that, listen, I just need to, for lack of a better word, just shut up and just focus on, you know, absorb everything that's going on around me. And I would just ask a million questions to yourself, to Renato, about, you know, okay, so we're doing this for preseason, but why are we doing this? Is there a specific reason? How come we're, you know, in the pool this day? I know we're just resting, but is there a reason to the recovery? Because obviously Coach Renato, for those who don't know, is a strength and conditioning coach for Regis College as well. So he, that whole exercise science component kind of comes in heavy with that, which is something I had virtually no experience with. And so that was something where I just wanted to be a sponge. You know, I just wanted to absorb everything around me and just try and just shut up, like I said, and just work hard and put my head down and just do the best that I possibly can so that I just, honestly, I was afraid that I was going to be out of my depth potentially. And that I wouldn't be talented at it. And I would, you know, Regis has had, unfortunately, up until last year, they had 9 winning seasons in a row. And I didn't want to be the guy who came in and with the other graduate assistants beforehand, you know, Renato Rosas was the graduate assistant before me, who is now the assistant at Clark. You know, they've gone on to do great things. The people in these positions have gone on to do very well after they've graduated. And I wanted to continue that tradition and not mess it up, for lack of a better word, to put it bluntly. And so I just wanted to be able to absorb everything around me and ask them a million questions. And I know I've annoyed Renato with a bunch. I know I've probably annoyed you as well with my constant questioning, but, you know, just to understand the anything from the coaching side of things to the player analysis to exercise science stuff, you know, the gym, the recovery process, diet, the landscape of Division III and you know, how the coaching world works in terms of, you know, how to conduct yourselves, you know, because I had never been to an ID camp. You know, if you're a young coach who has never gone to, you know, a exact camp or MAPS camp or something, you know, how do you conduct yourself? Do you talk to their coaches? Do you just stay in the court? You know, how is that? So I had to kind of navigate that at first, as I'm sure everybody had to. So my biggest thing was just to ask you guys a million questions as much as I could, just to be able to gather as much information so that, you know, when I eventually, you know, am given more responsibility, I can nail it when I get it, you know?
Well, what you touched upon is something very important here. You have an open mind, and your depth of curiosity is unbounded. And I mean that in a very complimentary fashion.
Well, thank you. Thank
it's, you. Is unbound, and it should always be unbound. I tell people, and again, one of the things I talk about and I teach coaching education courses is, you know, is that, you know, it's a journey, and the journey ends when you die. I often talk about, and I show my age about, I quote David Crosby from Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. First, I have to explain who Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young is, but when I get to David Crosby, the quote I always say is, I want to be learning something on the day I die. Right? And the only way to be learning things, including on the day you die, is to have an open mind and always be inquisitive, always be curious, and always want to know more. You use the term sponge, and that's very accurate. So, you know, to all the young coaches out there, you know, particularly those who, you know, come out of the gate and they get out of college, you know, they get their undergraduate degree, maybe in a graduate degree, and they rack up a couple of, you know, licenses, and they think they know everything. You don't know everything. You'll never know everything. So what Warren has described, what you have described here, Warren, is a young man who's eager to learn, open-minded, curious, asked questions, was very fortunate to have some good people around you, thank goodness for that, and ultimately had an open mind to take it all in. And then you'll have more information to that will allow you to be a more secure, analytical, capable coach every day that goes by. And I think that's an important thing for folks to really understand. You know, talk about being a young coach. So you get through year one at Regis as a graduate assistant. You learn the ropes, so to speak. You get ready for year two, and this thing called COVID-19 hits, this pandemic. Talk us through briefly the chronology about, you know, when you learned about it, and then when things started to shut down, and then the things you had to do to continue to do your job, because you still had to go out and recruit for a soccer program. How did that whole pandemic thing, how did you learn about it? How did it affect you in the early stages of it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that, like, most people, we just heard on the news, there's this thing happening in China, so on and so forth. And naturally, you know, maybe a little bit selfishly, I'm like, okay, well, that's very unfortunate, but hopefully, you know, this just doesn't come over here and we're fine. And at this point, I mean, this was the end of February or so, mid-February maybe. And obviously our season is over. We're in the height of the recruiting season in terms of wrapping up our class. And I'm going to ID camps every weekend. We're starting the whole plan for our spring season is basically set. We're like getting in the gym. We're getting ready to start. We're going on team runs. And I'm very excited to start my, you know, first spring season and be able to go on with that. We're scheduling who we're going to play for our one game day, of course. And Coach Renato just called it one day at lunch. He just said, this thing is going to be bad. If it hits the States, it's going to be bad and colleges are going to close. And at first I'm thinking about like, what is he talking about? Like he's just spouting nonsense, you know? But just like with most things with Coach Renato, he nailed it. He nailed it right away. He's like a wise old owl. Like he just knows everything like 3 weeks beforehand. He can call when players are going to get injured. He can call when, you know, this guy's not going to be, you know, trustworthy. This guy's going to have academic issues. Like he just somehow knows. And he called the virus. I know that sounds crazy.
We should have spoken to him before we spoke to anybody else, I guess, huh?
Yeah. I mean, like he kind of called it. And right. Once the virus hit and I was doing my secondary duty at Regis is game operations. So I was doing lacrosse games. I was doing the basketball season had just ended. And so I was out there doing lacrosse stuff and they only played three games and then it was bang, everyone's gone. Everyone's moving out. And I had stayed on campus for another week or so. And it's obviously different for me because I'm from Florida and the other graduate assistants are fortunately enough from New England or just from local Massachusetts. Cities and towns. So the question was, am I going to go home? Am I going to stay? And the answer very clearly was, this is not going to be a little month hiatus. You know, I just thought maybe I could just stay on campus and ride this thing out. And that was obviously not the case. And I was promptly sent home and I went back home to Florida, who at the time ironically had no cases. And as you said, had to continue recruiting. And it was very difficult. I mean, obviously everything was through email. Everything was through watching videos. But like I said, for us at that point, we had already gotten several players already. We had about eight commits at that time and we had graduated eight. So we had wanted to, and I spoke about with Coach Renato to kind of reload the squad a little bit more. We had eight players graduating. And we wanted to be able to try and add more depth to the squad. We thought that was an issue throughout the year as well. And of course, as everyone wants more quality across the board, right? Because great players are always nice, no matter what position they play. And so that was really the challenge, which kind of put the finishing touches on. Well, the issue, of course, naturally is we had a guy who was from Turks and Caicos, the island of Turks and Caicos. We had a couple guys who are from Miami. We had a player from California. We had a player from Texas who had already bought their tickets. Official visits were scheduled, overnight visits, tours were booked. And then the virus hits and everyone is, you know, the whole world's thrown into chaos. And, you know, these are guys who are quality players who, you know, obviously we had to ask them, you know, you can't visit the school anytime soon and you can't fly. So how do you want to go about this? Do you want to make your decision without seeing the school? And naturally, of course, the answer was no. And unfortunately for those kids, they didn't end up attending any school, any college as of now. So we ended up finishing, which I was very, very pleased with because we actually ended up getting a lot of those kids who came and saw the school, fortunately, before the whole virus hit and was able to see the school in its natural state. We were just waiting simply what their decision was, you know, is it a yes or is it a no? And so fortunately we had a couple people in that position and they all said yes. So that was awesome. So we ended up finishing with 12 commits, which was fantastic. But, you know, if you consider the three guys that we could have had, I mean, a massive class of 15, potentially 16 people. So I was very proud of that individually because as I spoke about before, Renato put me in charge of a lot of different things. And one of them was to head up the recruiting. Of course, he helped with that in many different facets, of course, as he should, being the head coach and with his knowledge and experience. But in terms of going out and going to the ID camps and really calling the kids and going online and watching the videos from websites or however you want to recruit was mainly, you know, my responsibility. And so I was very happy that, you know, I was told that we had never gotten that many before and that that was a kind of like a record, so to speak, for not just the men's soccer team, but for the athletic department. So I was very pleased with that in my first go round of recruiting to be able to recruit that many. And not just that many guys, the quality of the players that we brought in, I thought was pretty good. I mean, we got a couple academy kids from down in Florida. We got an academy kid from Paramount in California. And then we've got obviously the rest of them are from the New England area. But I was very happy with the quality that we got. But of course, as you said, you know, now this bleeds into the summer. And now I'm sitting there at home and just like every other coach in the country, I'm thinking, okay, so we've got our squad set. When can I come back? When can we start planning? And you know, you're sitting there and I'm starting for the class of 2021, you know, this year's seniors, of course, recruiting them. And I'm taking my classes as well, which are all, of course, switched to online. And the question then became week after week, what did you hear? What did you hear? You know, talking to other coaches in the conference, they heard this. Oh, so-and-so heard this. Oh, well, my AD is talking about this. And it just became just like a wild goose chase, you know, of just everyone heard a different rumor each week and it was worse than the last, or we're definitely playing. No, we're definitely not playing. We're playing with masks. We're only playing in conference. And I think ultimately, obviously, as the day started to tick down to the D-Day, so to speak, of when they were going to decide, it was obvious that there was just, you know, very little chance that it was going to happen this year, at least for the fall. And sorry, go ahead.
No, it's no worse. So as we now know that the season was canceled, in fact, that the conference play was canceled, and, you know, a lot of conferences were canceled. And, you know, as we now know, well into this pandemic and well into the fall now, that not just soccer, but a lot of sports and conferences and leagues across the country were shut down. Staying on, you know, the issue of the pandemic, I'm going to tip my hand. I hope you don't mind. I know one of the things you were really concerned about, and I'm going to kind of set this up, but I want you to talk through it. One of the things you were really concerned about, and you called me about, was your professional development. You were really concerned about, is this going to be really detrimental toward my professional development? I mean, one of the biggest obstacles, and I'm feeling it as a coach educator, coaching education, at least in the earlier stages, were non-existent because we couldn't get together. Now there's more hybrid things going on. There are different pathways by which you can secure your licenses or diplomas. So share with the audience, you know, that internal conversation that Warren Backman had, that, geez, not only is my season canceled, but my professional development, getting on the next rung of the ladder, which requires me to get a license or a diploma or certifications that are so necessary in our game. Talk to the audience about that process.
Yeah, that was probably the bitterest pill to swallow, to be quite honest. When I started at Regis, it was my goal to, by the time I graduated in 2 years, to be able to have my U.S. Soccer D, my U.S. Soccer C, maybe, the national diploma, and then the advanced national diploma, potentially, right? At the very least, I wanted to get up to U.S. Soccer D and then have my regular diploma from United Soccer Coaches. And, you know, I was scheduled for it. I was scheduled to be on track for all these things, the C, the D, the advanced national diploma, and so on and so forth. But literally my date to go and do it was, and I'm not joking, was about 10 to four, a week and a half to 2 weeks when the virus kind of canceled everything and everything just stopped in early March. And it was mid-March, I believe. So it was just like literally just missed the due date. And it was very, very frustrating for me because I was thinking, you know, naturally as I, throughout that year, like you said, I'd gone to ID camps and spoken to other coaches and, you know much, much, much more about the field and how to play it and how to navigate getting jobs and interviews and, you know, what's open and what's not, and how to go about that whole side of the business, you need some diplomas, obviously. I mean, there's no if, and, or buts or way around it. You need some sort of diploma. And although I've got, you know, up to, you know, E, which, you know, not to be rude, but is pretty much, you know, nothing, is entirely online.
Well, I wouldn't say nothing, but I understand what your point is.
Yeah. It's very little. I was, you know, concerned about, you know, how is this going to look when I, you know, go and apply for another job when, you know, listen, I was scheduled throughout that summer to assist on a PDL team. I was scheduled throughout that summer to do the coaching education courses, to coach my own club team as well. There was like a town league locally that I was doing to just get more individual coaching experience of having my own team. And I just felt kind of cheated out of all of that because it was like, well, these are these things that are supposed to happen. These are what the other graduate assistants prior to me have done. This is what you're, you know, supposed to do allegedly, and I'm not able to do it. So I was very concerned. Like you said, I called you in a little bit of a panic, just like, well, what does this mean for me going forward? You know, obviously, you know, throughout my 2 years here, you have to, you know, move on. And, you know, the question becomes, you know, then where do I go? And that's obviously, I think, for a lot of young people, and maybe it's just a typical millennial thing, you know, you're impatient, right? And you're always trying to be like, okay, so I've done this, what's the next step? Okay, so I'm done with Regis, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? What can I conquer? What can I move on to? And, you know, it was hard for me, and I remember the conversation with you, to take a step back and just be like, well, let's look at what you've done, but at the same time, you know, just take a deep breath, you know, just relax. Like there are ways that these things end up working themselves out. And, you know, as you said, you know, to make as many connections as possible, that's obvious for any field that you're in. Doesn't matter if it's marketing or coaching or, you know, any sort of field of business. But, you know, to be able to try my best to, you know, focus on more of the connections, to try and navigate any which way. As we came back, thankfully, I'm coaching at Sachem's New England, which is Gary Crompton's club in Winchester. I've been able to coach two club teams there since the season has unfortunately not happened. And I've actually gotten more, ironically, more on-field practice experience, practice reps, practice talking in front of teams, going to more ID camps, making more connections than, ironically, I ever would have had if we had just played a normal season.
Yeah, I think, I remember vividly telling you that to be patient. Even though we were in the grips of the pandemic, you know, at some point it was going to be over. It was going to, and it's going to come to an end. And so, you know, be patient. And then to look at it as a challenge, you know, how can I grow from this? You know, it's cliche, Warren, and you know what I'm going to say. You know, we're all going to face challenges. It's a fact of life, whether it's a professional challenge or a personal challenge. You can look at it two ways. How is this going to put me down? How is this going to hold me back? Or how can I overcome this? And when I overcome it, how can I be that much better because I chose to take on the challenge? And you did the latter. You know, you kept yourself out there. You continue with seeking out connections and broadening your network, which is always important. So that was a plus. And then but you were fortunate that there was a soccer landscape here in Massachusetts that at some point we now see that, you know, clubs and youth soccer organizations and even high school for that matter were able to get out on the field with some modifications. So, but yeah, you know, we'll be beyond all this. So let's back up for a second here. Okay. So you're at, you know, the college level, you're going to get your graduate degree. Have you decided, I guess this is a personal question and one for my audience as well. Have you sorted out which ladder you've decided to climb it? Will it be, I want to be a good high school coach at a good high school. I want to be a college coach. I want to be, you know, Division I, Division II, Division III, JUCO. I want to get professional coach. Heck, maybe I want to be at the international level and work for the U.S. men's national team. Have you sorted out which ladder you've decided to climb, or is that still kind of out there? Where are you at? Like a lot of young coaches, where are you at?
I think that's still kind of up for debate. My personal goal is that, you know, I would love to be able to stay in the college game. personally. I think whether it's Division One, Two, or Three, you know, I want to stay in college. I love the process. I love recruiting. I love talking to parents. I love traveling and meeting new people and the families and hearing their stories. And ultimately, I think my skill level suits the college game. You know, I was a college player. I played at a high level for my my team back in Tampa. And, you know, I want to stay in that sort of realm of college soccer. And I'm hoping that I'm able to. You know, I have no qualms with coaching high school or being a high school coach. But I just think personally, you know, for my level of, you know, I guess you could say just intensity of how I conduct myself, I think college is a perfect level. For me individually, as you said, I mean, I would like to, as I've, you know, gone over and kind of learned, I know that a lot of coaches, you know, try and they work their way up to Division One, and then kind of, you know, maybe after 5, 6, 7, 8 years, as they build their resume, take a step down to Division Three. There's plenty of coaches I can name who have done that. That might be something I think that really interests me, is the fact of that, listen, I can get a taste of the top level. I can get a taste of a great Division One school, hopefully. And then, you know, maybe as I get older and, you know, maybe hopefully get married one day, hopefully have children of my own, kind of take a step back and be able to, you know, lead up a strong Division III program in New England and, you know, kind of lead from the front there. So that is kind of my goal moving forward. But like I said, I mean, with the virus and everything, it's really thrown everything out of whack. I would love to be able to stay in New England. But I'm certainly not landlocked there by any stretch of the imagination. I would love to be able to go back to Florida at some point in my life. There's a lot of great schools down there who I have a lot of connections with. But ultimately, you know, the question then becomes, you know, that's just that game of sort of cat and mouse of what opens, you know. And as we've spoken about before, with the virus and everything that's happening and talking to other coaches at, you know, different recruiting events, with most schools and hiring freezes right now, how does one really go about it? You know, it's one thing in a normal year when there's tons of jobs open and whatnot. I'm kind of waiting to see, I'm sure with as many other young coaches are, or anyone finishing their graduate assistant degree, is that, you know, is the market going to be kind of like in 08 where, you know, the economy's bad, nobody's going out and kind of leaving their jobs, there are no jobs? Or is it going to be the opposite, where there's going to be tons of movement all around in different faculties? So it'll be interesting to see. I don't know, obviously. I don't have a magic ball to see how it works. But I am, like I said, I've tried my best to make every connection and make a good impression on everybody, as I think any young coach listening out there should absolutely do. I mean, every time you go out and you recruit, you can easily just sit there on the side and watch kids and text on your phone, or you can be proactive. You can go out there, you can meet other coaches, talk to them about their program, talk to them about what they do, how they came up. And that's how I've kind of formulated my future plans, is speaking to other coaches who I've met. And, you know, how did you get to be, you know, the head coach of blah, blah, blah college, you know, and listening to their stories and how they've kind of traversed the landscape. And there seems to be a couple different pathways, as you said, that have been able to, you know, lead people to where they want to go. But hopefully I'm able to take those. But like I said, I think that my main goal is to stay in New England and is to try and, you know, develop my kind of grow my roots here and keep developing my coaching style, my coaching abilities, and get more diplomas. And then, of course, obviously move up and see how high we can go. I think my dad, obviously being in the MLS and coaching at a very high level himself, I would love to at some point if that opportunity ever came. You know, one can obviously dream, but I'm not counting on that in the sense of that, hey, if I'm not the coach of the New England Revolution, just for example, you know, or an assistant, that I have somehow failed in any capacity. Or if, you know, you can say at any level, if I'm not the coach of Harvard, have I failed? You know, I think that's a ridiculous, I think talking to a lot of other young coaches, that is sort of like the thought process. And maybe, as I said before, that's more of a millennial way of viewing at things. which I don't think is very fair to yourself, because you're just going to drive yourself crazy.
Right.
And it is not really fair to expect that of yourself.
Sure.
So I think that ultimately, you know, I'm seeing where it takes me, but I really want to stay within the college game.
You know, I mentioned the ladders earlier. You know, it's not four separate ladders. I want to make sure my audience knows. I'll use myself as an example. You know, I had one constant ladder. I started out as a youth coach and then progressed to a high school coach and then progressed to a college coach. You know, so it could be one long ladder that starts, you know, at a youth level or high school level and then college and then professional and, you know, international, or it could be one ladder. If you're that focused, it can be. You know, you brought up a couple of important things that I think, you know, young coaches should be aware of. The idea of not being landlocked and the willingness to move. I know a lot of coaches, young coaches who ask me, a lot of the questions that you ask me about, you know, climbing the ranks and, you know, they want to be this level of coach, that level of coach. One of the first things I ask them, are you willing to move? And if the answer is yes, then obviously the opportunities are far more vast. I remember using myself as an example, many, many, many years ago when I first started in this process, I remember having this aha moment where, you know, I was coaching at the Division III level in college, which I thoroughly enjoyed and eventually spent my entire career at that level and have no regrets. But I did early on had some aspirations. I'm just, you know, I've done pretty well at this school. I've tried the Division I, and I was a final candidate for two Division I schools, both of which were well out of New England. And I remember being a single guy in my apartment looking at these two letters and going like, my goodness, this is like real. Like, this is real. I'm going to have to move. And this is just my own personal story. Me being the, you know, the old school Italian kid, close to my family, close to my friends, I thought about quality of life. I decided to stay in New England, stay in Boston. Now, fortunately for me, and as you now know this, you know, Boston is a hotbed of soccer. You can build an entire career just staying in the Boston area in Massachusetts. But yeah, you know, the willingness to move is certainly a consideration for a young coach. And then last point, you know, again, this is based on something you said and something that I get in a lot of, again, a coaching education course. I'll have someone come up to me and say, hey, you know, Coach Pacini, I want to coach at the highest level. You know, what do I need to go at the highest level? And I always ask, you know, I answer it with a question. I go, well, what's the highest level? What's the highest level? And there's always that pause. And it's not a, you know, I'm not trying to catch him or, you know, a trick question. But I always say, well, you have to determine, you know, what path you'd like to go on. Where do you see yourself in a year or 2 years or 5 years? And then you follow that path. Maybe you follow a path for 2 or 3 years and then you reassess. And then you follow another path for a year or two, whatever. And then you reassess. Because as time goes on, environments change, experiences change, challenges change. Before you know it, you have, you know, you've landed at where you have found your highest level to be. And that could be a high school coach. That could be a high school coach. That's your highest level. That's where you are happiest. You're most effective. You're most passionate. You're most emotional about. That is your highest level. It doesn't mean you have to be coaching the U.S. men's national team. That's not the highest level. It's where you find your highest level. Where you, again, like I said, you're happiest and you feel the most connected to. So last but not least, Warren, I saved this point for the last, and I think it's an important one. What advice would you give a young coach just starting out? Let's take COVID off the map for a second, because it will be off the map. It will be off the map at some point very soon. What advice would you give a young coach just starting out?
Well, I think first and foremost, you know, if they've played the game before, I think that is such an easy way to kind of get back into it. Regardless of if they've only played high school soccer or if they were able to play college and now they want to get back into it, I think going back to where, hopefully, if you had a good relationship with your prior high school coach or college coach, that is a great way to start. I remember when I first was discussing this in terms of what can I do, the first person I called was Jared Scarpacci and Brian Harkin. You know, those were the two people who coached me at Emerson. Those are the two people who I called. And they were able to provide a lot of, you know, advice, obviously, and just kind of just a realm of what to expect. And I think that is something where, you know, if you're, it's very hard, I think, as a new coach to be able to just be thrust into a new experience where you're like, okay, you know, I'm going to go try and coach at blank school, which I know nothing about, or in a different region or a different part of the country. I think that maybe just the easiest thing to start out with is to go stick with what you know. Go back to the coach where you're comfortable with. You've worked with him before. You can help volunteer. You can go and do a graduate assistant there at your prior school and kind of start to make connections in a area, in a conference with players, with coaches that you already know. They know you and you have that common relationship and just professional respect for. But I think that just like I did, the next best thing is to go out and coach club. I think that there's so many opportunities to run ID clinics. I do them with Aztec a lot now, to go and have experiences with, you know, other camps with other, you know, little kids, 5-6 year olds. I think that those are kind of the easiest to start with because it's just, you know, it's fun. It's as Jared Scarpacci likes to say, it's herding cattle, you know, just to be able to get them together. And there's not crazy tactics or, you know, a lot of intense, high, you know, a lot of like everything's on the line type of stuff. I think that being able to go to those camps and, as I said before, just be a sponge and try and soak all those things up is definitely a route that you can take. Going back to your old schools, definitely a route that you can take, just to see what it's like and kind of get started there as an assistant or just a volunteer. Or as I've done and many, many others have done, do a graduate assistant. I mean, I was fortunate enough to where, you know, when I was looking for my graduate assistants, I had a few options. One of the reasons why I chose Regis, along with the fact that, you know, I was able to take some liberties and have some freedom that Coach Renato gave me, like I mentioned before, to recruit and to, you know, run practice and do the films and the scouting and so on and so forth. But it was also the fact that, I mean, I played Regis with Emerson. I know the GNAC. I know the teams that we play. I know these guys. I know what to expect. I know the quality of the players that I was going to be coaching. I know the quality of players I needed to recruit. It wasn't like I was going halfway across the country to a school in, you know, Idaho, and I never knew the conference, never knew the style, never knew the culture, didn't know the area. That would be definitely much, much, much more difficult to do. So I think that was definitely something, if just something nearby or something that you're at least have some roots or some experience in already, that can definitely help. But I think most of all is to just, like I said, is just to be a sponge and absorb as much as you can, whether it's coaching at a little ID clinic or it's going with, you know, a high school coach at a college level. It doesn't matter. I think that ultimately, any experience at that point, at least it was for me when I was starting out, was good experience. And I knew, you know what is good and what is bad. You know what is right and what is wrong to your extent of your talent and your ability. And I think that, you know, one of my friends, like I said at the start, Nico Emack, mentioned something to me that really has kind of rung true when I've had moments of doubt or, you know, like, ooh, should I really, you know, be doing this type of thing or I should be doing something else or so on and so forth. Which was, he said, always bet on yourself. You know, there always comes a time where you just have to bet on yourself and you have to trust your own gut and your own instincts and say, listen, you know, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to go to Regis. You know, I'm going to go and go and coach that club team. I'm going to go and do that ID clinic. I know it's kind of daunting, especially if you've never spoken in front of kids before, you've never been in the position as, you know, the coach, quote unquote. You know, starting with younger kids is easier, I would say, you could argue, depending on who you are. And I think that just being able to get as much practice as possible, speaking in front of people, especially if you're not comfortable in it. Like I said, if it's a college thing, talking to parents, the whole recruiting process is much different than anything you've ever experienced before. And then, of course, you know, naturally just learning the whole X's and O's of, you know, you obviously, regardless of what level you've played, have had some sort of tactical knowledge of the game. And that is enhanced once you're a coach, because you have to see things from a full perspective instead of, you know, I was a left back and left midfielder myself, only seeing things from a left midfield perspective. I wasn't really concerned about, you know, the runs that forwards were making until I became a coach. And I was like, oh, okay, these are, you know, I'm seeing why this is not working, because the forwards are not curling their run. They're just going straight. And that's why they're always offsides, you know, for example. So I think that those things are just very important, and to try and, like I said, just absorb and use to the best of your ability.
There you go. Well, I think that's well put. Well, you know, on a personal note, Warren, I'm looking forward, and I mean this in all seriousness, looking forward to, you know, we, and I say we, our mutual great friend, Renato Capobianco, the head coach at Regis, and yourself, and then me, as the goalkeeper coach, getting back on the field together over at Regis and reconvening with the team and enjoying our times together. I'm really looking forward to that. And I certainly hope that this pandemic gets, you know, gets goes away and we reach a point where we're healthy enough and we're safe enough and we can get back on the field. I look forward to getting back out on the field with you. So so our guest today, has been Warren Backman. I think the conversation today was really terrific for all you, young coaches out there who are just starting out. Certainly, if you're starting out and you're in the same boat that Warren is, that you're navigating your way not only through the, you know, the professional path of becoming a coach, but navigating your way through this COVID-19 crisis. And I think Warren did a great job. So, Warren, thanks so much for being on the show. We're going to break for a brief commercial message, and we'll reconnect on the other side. My name, as you know, is Giovanni Pacini. This is the GP Soccer Podcast. Don't you go anywhere, because as I always say, I will hunt you down. Talk to you on the other side. Hey there. This is Giovanni Pacini of the GP Soccer Podcast. We're living through some incredible times these days as we all deal with the COVID-19 crisis. But we can deal with this together as a global community by just taking these amazingly simple steps that will go a long way in beating this terrible virus. Wear a mask. Use hand sanitizers after touching surfaces outside your home. Wash your hands for at least 20 seconds. Social distance when you're out and about in the community. Don't venture out if you don't have to. Be sure to disinfect surfaces in your home. And certainly, don't gather in crowds any larger than what health experts dictate. You know, we're all in this together, and together is how we'll beat this crisis. Stay safe out there.
Hey, everybody. This is Oscar De Limos, the director of the league operations of the Rhode Island Youth Superliga. You're listening to Giovanni Pacini on the GP Soccer Podcast.
Welcome back to the GP Soccer Podcast. I am your host, Giovanni Pacini. Thanks again to Warren Backman for being a guest on my show today. Warren is a terrific young man, and he's got a great future ahead of him. You'll be hearing great things from Warren as time goes on. He will land on his feet rather solidly, despite dealing with the pandemic. So thanks, Warren, for being on the show. I look forward to us getting back on the field over at Regis hopefully in the near future. So I started the show, as you all know, with a little holiday music to kind of get us in the holiday spirit. We're in the midst of the holiday season. And I wanted to kind of close the show with a holiday message, some holiday spirit, but a holiday message that kind of transcends all faiths, transcends every which way that you may celebrate the holiday season. And in doing some research, trying to find the right words, if you will, I stumbled across this that I think... that I think will resonate with all of you. And it reads like this. As the world fights to figure everything out, I'll be holding doors for strangers, letting people cut in front of me in traffic, saying good morning, keeping babies entertained in grocery lines, stopping to talk to someone who is lonely, tipping generously, waving at police, sharing food, giving children a thumbs up, being patient with sales clerks, smiling at a passerby and buying a stranger a cup of coffee. Why? Because I choose to live in a world where love is invincible. Join me in showing kindness, understanding, and judging less. Be kind to a stranger. Give grace to friends who are having a bad day. Be forgiving with yourself. And if you can't find kindness, be kindness. I'm Giovanni Pacini. I'm the host of the GP Soccer Podcast. I wish you all a wonderful, wonderful holiday season. We'll see you next time.